Moncrief on News Talk.
Our first guest is all about the sound of silence. Oh, that's even giving me the heebie-jeebies doing that. They have previously taken part in 3 silent retreats. But what's involved in a silent retreat and who benefits from a silent retreat? Joining me to discuss is Jane McNamara, broadcaster and journalist. Hello, Jane.
Hello, Fionnuala. Thank you so much for having me.
Why? Why do this? This is my idea of hell, but you were drawn to do this.
I was, and it's funny because everyone in this building particularly cannot understand the draw to a silent retreat, obviously, because we're in the business of talking. But I first was drawn to this idea in 2021, you know, obviously after the pandemic, there was just a huge amount of stuff online. So content in general increased and I was working in media and I just was sick of my phone. So the first time I started looking into it, it was for like a tech break. That was what it was. And, you know, people listening, they might be a little intimidated by the idea of a silent retreat or they might find it alienating, but like I am in no way a zen kind of person, you know.
Okay.
Not at all. Like I have all my snooze alarms. I drink too much caffeine. I install delete and install Instagram. Like I'm that person.
Okay.
So if I can do this and get something out of it, I really think a lot of people can.
Why a silent retreat though, as opposed to a digital detox kind of retreat if one of the issues is the phone?
I think for me, that's probably a personality thing. I do like extreme situations. I like being thrown into something that's a bit mad and not being able to leave it. So that was kind of why.
Okay. So talk to me about that first silent retreat then. Was it everything you'd kind of imagined? Did you kind of come up to any stumbling blocks in doing it? How did you find it in the end?
Like I said goodbye to my friend and I was like, I won't hear a sound for 3 days now. And that's not how it was, obviously, because there's a woman who, like the ones I've gone on, Mario Oosterhoff runs them and she obviously speaks. So I was disappointed that there was kind of sound. But
you were like, she didn't commit.
I literally was like, I was like, what are we doing? Stop. But so I was really kind of gung-ho on being quite extreme. But yeah, like I'll tell you the routine of it if you want first.
Yeah,
and then my kind of observations. So there is a strict routine and I felt quite busy on this. So like there's a meditation at 7:15 that's optional that I frequently slept through. Then there was an 8 o'clock breakfast. Then you sit in silence with your group. And then you, after breakfast at about 10:30, you kind of have a sitting meditation. Then you go outside for a walking meditation. And this kind of alternates to lunch. Then you have a break. Then you do that kind of sitting and walking alteration again until your tea time at 6:00. Then you have another sitting meditation at 8:00. So that's the routine. Same every day.
Doesn't sound that hard when you put it like that. It's a lot of sitting down and I'm really into that, to be honest.
Well, it's so funny because the walking part I found so hard. So she demonstrated the walking meditation and obviously like you're not speaking. There's no tech. There's no Netflix. There's no external stimulus or at least it's reduced as much as possible.
Okay.
And so when you're going outside, you're kind of, you know, told or you're invited. Nothing is, you're not directed to do anything. You can kind of do what you want, but the invitation is, you know, you go outside and you walk incredibly slow, like comically slow. So when I look around outside, I'm just seeing like all these adults just walking in a really strange zombie-like kind of way in this kind of this garden. But I found it really hard because I'm always rushing and I'm always late and I'm always running up the stairs, running to the bus. So it forces you to completely slow down.
Were you corrected if you were walking too quickly
No.
or if you were caught out speaking?
No.
It was kind of self-guided and self-disciplined.
Yeah. And I think the whole world of meditation and all this stuff, there's loads of different disciplines and schools of thought. But Mario, the woman that was leading this, she kind of practices meditation in a less rigid way. Her kind of invitation is to you not like have a zen mind and like block out everything, but just have the thoughts you have and do what you can do. And that is all I was probably ever going to be able to do. So no, I never felt any pressure to do anything correctly. The notion of something being correct was kind of called into question. Like, how can you walk incorrectly?
Yeah, true. Did you feel awkward at all?
No. So there was one thing that I loved about it, which I thought was really kind of funny that I didn't expect to even think of, but just sitting down with strangers and not having any small talk. Just sitting there, like with very close to people, you don't have to smile at them. And I don't know if it's a woman thing or if it's coming from a small town, but you know, the thing that we do in this country, like, hey, hi, how's it going? And it's very nice and it makes us all very friendly, but it's exhausting. And so you're sitting there and you're like, these people don't care and I don't care about them and it's fine.
Yeah. You don't have to perform the niceties.
Yeah, exactly. There's no expectation. And there's this just understood agreement that we don't need to do that here.
So what were the benefits you found from doing the first one that made you book silent retreat number 2 and silent retreat number 3?
Okay, so the benefits for me was that I came out afterwards and it felt like a nervous system reset. And I think that that was the idea originally behind holidays, that we would come back feeling really refreshed and relaxed. But now we come back, or some of us come back from holiday being like, oh God, I need to book a holiday to get over my holiday.
Yeah.
So after the first one, I felt really calm. And I also felt like I had kind of remembered a time from when I was younger when I wasn't constantly on my phone worrying. And it's like I kind of returned to that. Now it was temporary and I went back to my, you know, nonsense after like after a day or two. But so yeah, I just felt really reset and calm.
Okay. In terms of the rules then, you're talking about limited external stimuli. Hmm. You were in this particular silent retreat, the first one, you were told not to write, but you did keep a journal.
She kind of like, like I said, she kind of,
let's enjoy the silence.
There you go.
There's your taste to see if you could
can
do it.
Can we sit in comfortable silence? Yeah, so there was no instruction. So she said, like, look, you can if you want to, but it's do what you want. And with regards to books, she was a little bit more kind of strict. Like, don't maybe not read a book. But I couldn't go through it without journaling.
Okay. And without obviously getting, I don't expect you to lay your journal bare out to all the News Talk listeners, but what did you kind of find yourself tracking? Was it the experience? Was it
no
other thoughts? Okay, interesting.
Everything I'm worried about in my life, every person that I'm worried about, my, you know, work relationships, every kind of thing that you don't have time to like ruminate almost is the wrong word, but just like every, you exhaust yourself because you're there for so long, so many hours and so many days, you just end up exhausting yourself. It kind of, this is probably not the correct thing to say, but it almost reminds me of if there's a kid and they're kind of having like a tantrum and you're just like, let them kind of run its course. So I just thought about whatever I wanted to.
Yeah. Do you think this is something that could potentially not benefit someone? Like, our silent retreats kind of, you know, you're saying you really benefited from because you were in this particular mindset, and I'm sure there's lots of listeners listening who are kind of feeling the same. But I'd imagine some people might sign up thinking, you know, this would be the correct thing for me, and then they actually get there and it actually proves more isolating, or they end up kind of struggling more than they realised.
Yeah, so I would say if you're hearing this and you're saying, oh, I couldn't do that, that's mad, I'd be lost without my phone, I think you'd be fine. And if you're somebody who has loads of responsibilities and people constantly pulling on you and you feel like you can't get a break, I think it would really work. I think if you were recently having gone through something very traumatic, like a bereavement, I think it's very intense. And I say that only because the first couple of times I did it, in hindsight, I really didn't have much to worry about. And then this third time I went after having lost like a kind of beloved family member. And
I'm sorry
to
hear that.
Thank you. And I was like, this is not as much crack. Like, yeah. I was just sitting with my really sad thoughts. And ultimately, I think it was really good. It was really good for me.
But it was harder.
It was harder. And I would hesitate to just blindly recommend this to somebody who might be feeling a little bit fragile. Mm. So that's just one thing I would kind of point out.
We have a text in. Is there penalties for people breaking the rules? And has anyone ever left?
There's no penalties, but I think, yeah, people, like I had to leave the last one. So the first two I did were 3 days. The second one was 6 days, no, it was 5.5. I had to leave a day early. So okay. That's fine. I mean, like, this isn't a rigid boot campy type of thing. This is like a healing thing that feel, you know, it's supposed to make you feel good.
Okay, so you went on to do two more. Were they more hardcore? Was it just kind of, you? Obviously you've said they were longer, even though you kind of had to wrap one up slightly earlier. Is that what you were kind of going for? Or do you have a name? Are you going to try and do 30 days? Could we not be hearing from you for a month potentially?
So the third one was longer, and that's what I wanted to test myself. And there's something called Vipassana, which some listeners might know about. It's a 10-day one, you know?
Okay.
And that's, there's a whole community in Ireland that they do that if you Google it. And then there, I've heard of people doing 30-day ones in like Thailand, which I just see, I'm so drawn to really intense experiences that are just mad. So I would be very drawn to that. But like, who has the time?
Yeah, 30 days is like, who's giving the annual leave to be like, yeah, go off and sit in your own thoughts. Cost, I would imagine, is a big thing though. Yeah. Is it expensive?
So for this, I mean, I don't want to speak too much about this one. This was kind of a donation-based thing.
Okay.
They're all different. They all work very differently.
Yeah.
So you just have to look that up yourself. But I would say not in any way more expensive than you know, a holiday and you're not doing anything. So you're, there's not any activity that you're paying for. You're not taking your card out, like tapping anything.
Okay. It's just kind of for the accommodation.
Yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah, you pay your accommodation, you pay the people that organize it, like any kind of retreat. But it's not something that I think would be an obstacle for anyone who has a little bit of, you know, a disposable income.
Having done it now though, would you kind of trust yourself to run your own type of experiment, or do you feel like you need the boundaries of the retreat?
I think that's a great question, and I think it's something that comes up a lot. Like, sure, you could do that at home. What's the big thing? And there's two things about that. I think being in a group and having human beings around you, although you're not really interacting with them, their kind of presence is, for me, it made me feel not lonely. Like, okay, I was part of a shared experience.
If you were looking around when you're eating your scrambled eggs and you weren't like, you were all kind of like, this is mad, but isn't this nice, communicating with your eyes?
I just felt like, oh, we're all here together. We don't need to be talking, but we're all here together. So you can't recreate that at home. And then secondly, not a chance would I have the discipline to do anything like that at home myself.
Yeah, I feel like I'd be
the
same.
And I think it'd be quite sad if you're just at home not talking and not looking at anything.
Yeah. You know? Is the food good?
Yeah, the food. So the way it works is that you kind of become part of the retreat on this particular one. Again, it's probably very different in others. And you help prepare it, and you might be given a job to kind of clean. So then as well, you're working in silence alongside your kind of fellow human beings, which feels good. And it just feels, I don't know, you kind of feel a little bit more connected to your humanity, a little bit woo-woo. But that's how you feel, because you're so quick to reach for something convenient, you know, in our daily lives. We don't kind of take the time to do things slowly. So it feels like a slowdown and a reset, as I said.
What was the demographic across these silent retreats? Was it broad? Did you find, again, obviously you can't talk to them, so maybe you don't necessarily know, but did you feel like it was a lot of people like you, potentially? Maybe not even that they looked like you or whatever, but they were potentially experiencing something similar to you.
Do you know what? I, honest to God, wouldn't even speculate, because firstly, I think it's such a private thing to do. And secondly, I don't have a clue, because I honestly was not thinking about the other people. That was what was so liberating. And they were not thinking about me. We were all very much in our own thoughts, thinking about our own lives.
Yeah. Text in, the ruminating and worrying about everyone sounds more stressful. Did she finally reach calm?
I'm enlightened now. Yeah, no, I've reached enlightenment, and I'm very obnoxious about it. No, I mean, I just found it, like, for me, right, if you're worried about something during the day, you have a job, it's not really appropriate for you to kind of oftentimes, you know, think about it and maybe have a little cry at work. You have to
push
it off.
You just don't have time.
You don't have time. You kick it down the road and you do that later on, right? And you go home and you still get, and then what happens for me anyway, and I think for a lot of people, is you go to bed, and then all of the thoughts that you have kicked down the road come into your head, and you spend half an hour wondering why you can't get to sleep. So for me, it's just this carved out time that you have made, that you can sit with your thoughts and kind of face them a little bit and sort them out and feel a little bit less scared of them. And then you can come back into the real world and, you know, do it all again.
How did that kind of, that sense or feeling at the end of the retreat feel?
I mean, I was so excited to get back to normal life. I wasn't like, oh, I'd love to stay. I was like, get me, you know.
You were like, this was great, but I'm done now.
Oh,
thank
yeah.
you.
Like, I am an extrovert. I love talking. I'm such a chatterbox. I'm somebody who should talk less. So absolutely was dying to get back on the phone and say, what's been happening? You know, I kind of expected there to be huge news. I was almost disappointed when I turned on my phone and there was like 5 WhatsApps and that was it.
Like, so, where is everyone?
Yeah. So like, and that's the other thing. Obviously, the great thing about not having your phone is that, you know, when you don't have your phone in your normal life, it's usually because you've lost it or it's dead or whatever, and you're kind of anxious. Whereas this, you have chosen to put it away. So you have told people, if there's an emergency, ring this number. You've sorted out your stuff. So it's this kind of, you've given yourself permission to be without it.
Yeah. And the responsibility is kind of offloaded.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, just being without your phone for 5 days is honestly revolutionary. Yeah. You just realize we are so stuck to it, like this thing in our pocket. We're constantly checking it. Is the battery there? Have I lost it? Did that person text me? All of these thoughts that we don't really need to be having all the time.
Yeah. So you're aiming to do one of these once a year?
I think so. I think if I can, I know it's kind of a luxury and privilege and people have really big responsibilities that they can't get out of. But if you can, or for me anyway, if I can carve time out to do this, I do think it will, you know, ultimately make me a nicer person.
Yeah. There you go. Maybe we should all be considering it. You've sold me on it, really? I will say. Now, I don't know if they'd let me stay. I'm imagining the scene in Fleabag where she and her sister try and do it and they ultimately get kicked out.
Oh, do they do it in Fleabag? I don't know.
There's something similar anyway. I could be slightly misremembering that, but it is some kind of women's health retreat and they're trying to whisper to each other and they're getting in trouble, which is what I think would happen to me. I'd be trying to talk to everyone and find common ground.
I think if that's your concern, that is the thing that it would be a challenge for you. I think it would probably do more for you than someone else because of that. Like, I think you should go for it.
I just think it'd be like a big key on my brain and the key would turn then and something would come out. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe I wouldn't like what comes out then either.
No, you would.
We'll see. Jay McNamara, broadcaster, journalist and silent retreat enthusiast. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Moncrief.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.